My name is Emma Martin, and this is the Lazy Keto Mum Podcast. If you are looking for help with keto and low carb, you have come to the right place.
Oh, goodness me. I have a very exciting guest for you guys today. His name is Ray Harrison, and he is a scientist. I heard Ray at the Low Carb Down Under conference recently on the Gold Coast, and the way he spoke about eat less, move more, and how wrong it is was so interesting to me, because it's something that we discover as we kind of go low carb and keto and, you know, not dead yet. And I wanted to pick his brains about why eat less, move more is flawed and why a calorie isn't actually a calorie and what our bodies do with that. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually so excited because the way you explained this was like not setting you up, you know, or anything. So you are a scientist and you are working at, you've got a PhD from the University of Queensland and you're studying superfluids. What does that mean?
So I haven't got my PhD yet. I'm about 2/3 of the way through. So superfluid essentially is just a quantum fluid. So we get some helium gas and we cool it down to about 10 millikelvin. So I think for perspective, that's colder than the empty space between galaxies.
Whoa, okay.
And it does some crazy things because it's in a quantum state, then it doesn't act like a normal fluid and no one really understands it. So my job is to try and figure out why it does what it does.
Well, I have no idea what you actually just said, apart from the fact that it's really cold and it's colder than being out in the galaxy. Wow, so you're a smart dude. You found keto and low carb a few years ago?
Yes, yeah.
What led you to that?
So initially, I saw my parents' health as they were getting older, declining. They were sort of getting fatter and sicker, less mobile. And at the time, I was like 22, 23. And I could see myself on the same trajectory. I was slowly gaining weight through my undergrad studies and becoming less active. I didn't want to end up like them. And so I think initially I looked into veganism and I saw like all the information online. I didn't get a chance to try it because I was living with my parents at the time. My mom is super into eating lots of meat for every meal. So that was out of the question, but I thought I'll look a bit deeper behind the science of diet and nutrition. And that's where I found low carb. And that's how I got into that space.
Yeah. Right. So what was it that attracted you apart from all the meat and, you know, the fact that you could actually eat easily at home? What did you see when you found keto? Like, what was it that you went, yeah, okay, let me
give it a go? There was a few factors. One is like you see a lot of diet fads pop up, but there's been a sort of ketogenic-ish kind of diet for quite a long time. There's people that discuss it back in the 1880s and then the early 1900s, and it pops up again in the 1950s. And then you even see it in the 1970s with the Atkins diet, and it's even still around today. And so if it didn't work, why would people keep resuscitating it just to get marketing material? Because you could easily point to the old. I mean, people did that 15 years ago. They're saying, oh, Atkins doesn't work, don't try Atkins again. But people are still doing it now, 10, 15 years later.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you see when you tried it?
Initially, I actually lost the first few kilograms you lose in like a week is, I think, all water weight. And then I just noticed I was slowly losing weight and I didn't feel like I was hungry or uncomfortable. I just noticed like a couple of weeks later, oh, my pants don't fit anymore. They keep sliding down. I've got to buy a new belt, you know? And I just felt like I had more energy. I was more alive. I didn't feel like I was having inflammation in my joints that was slowing me down during the day. So it really worked. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you don't, like, you just look at it for fat loss and then all of a sudden your fingers aren't creaky and you're sleeping better. It's like, yeah. What's going on with that? Who'd have thought that coming off sugar and carbohydrates would actually benefit you that way?
Definitely.
So how much weight did you lose?
About 20 kilos. So the heaviest I was 105 kilos when I moved to Queensland 3.5 years ago, and I'm now 85, 86 kilos.
Wowzers. So you've maintained that for all that time?
Yeah, all that time.
Wow. Has that been kind of effortless or have you had to work for that?
Pretty much effortless. I did go backwards a little bit over COVID when we're all locked away, but I was able to get back on it pretty easily.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what did you do at the start? Like how did you do keto?
At the start, it wasn't well thought out. I just sort of, I cut out all the bread, all the sugar. I was eating a lot of cheese, a lot of ham. I was cooking, you know, steak and stew, and I had a few other like recipes I would make at home. Like I would just get chicken and fry it up and like smash some avocado in with it. And then over time, I sort of refined it a bit better, got some more foods in there.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what was the biggest benefit? Obviously, you lost 20 kilos. What would you say the best thing was?
The best thing, I mean, I was 24 and I felt like I had trouble moving. Like I just sat at a desk all day and I couldn't sit on the floor for like 30 seconds without being uncomfortable and cramping and having to get up and move. And now I actually feel like a child again. I can go sit on the floor for an hour and I don't care. It's just having that freedom to move around and live life that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we just kind of take for granted, that we're all going to age the same thing. But I seriously feel like I've aged backwards. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, definitely. I really do feel like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like just when everything, and I don't think most people understand what inflammation is. So we don't know that what we're eating is causing that because we're just following the food pyramid, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was going to say, you just get used to a base level of inflammation. And so for me, I had, particularly my right hip, it was sort of, I had sharp pains in there. It was a bit creaky. I didn't know why. It was like that all the time. I thought, okay, maybe that's just the way my hip is. You know, it's just sore and creaky. And then I cut the sugar out and it goes back to normal. Like, oh, wow, it's actually, it was just some inflammation. Then now I know how much better I can feel.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I think that makes keto sustainable because you know how much better you feel.
Yeah.
And like your skin clears up and you feel stronger and the cravings are gone. So that's super cool. What I wanted to talk to you about, you were talking about a calorie not being a calorie at like down under. And this, you know, it's a big topic because we have believed the food pyramid and eat less, move more for what, 70, 80 years. Tell me what you discovered and why that theory is wrong. That's a big topic.
So I think the first part of the calorie story is this scientist called Atwater, who back, I think it was the 1870s or 1880s, he was a chemist in America, and he went to Germany and he got a project in the agricultural sector. And they were trying to improve the yield of crops in farming. And they wanted to know how much fertilizer to put in to get so much growth out of a crop. And so that's an energy in, energy out equation. And so he was looking at how much energy you're putting in with the fertilizer and how much plant material you're getting out. And the way they did this is a proxy for the energy inside of a material is you sort of light it on fire and see how much heat escapes from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were literally burning the fertilizer, seeing how much heat they can generate with the fertilizer. And then they would see the plants grow with and without fertilizer, and they would see like how much extra heat they can get out of the plants, which is essentially how much more the plant has grown. And this kind of worked well, and it's okay because growing, you know, corn is a simpler system than the human body. Atwater then moved back to the US, and he was asked by the US government to sort of do a similar analysis of humans for diet and nutrition. And that's where he started. It's not a bad starting point, but it is very far from how human biology actually works. The issue is a few decades after he implemented this, and he was doing studies to see like how much energy is in certain types of foods, like proteins or carbs or fats, and how much energy does the human extract from that. He himself admits in his own writings that this is really bad and very inaccurate. That the government guidelines were like, oh, great, we'll take this because now we can put numbers on things for food labels and examples like that. And then it got rolled out into schools and everyone's taken it for granted as something that's already known. And there's very few people actually exploring how to update that model.
Yeah, which is a problem in itself, isn't it? So, I mean, we know that that's not right, but basically everything that's being taught to our kids and everything that has been taught to us was based on the fact that when they burnt something, the energy that came out, like that, they were doing that equation and then they were saying the human body worked the same way. Is that right?
Essentially, yeah. They're assuming that's how much chemical, because when you burn something, you're pulling apart a molecule. And you know, when you get the black soot when you're cooking, that's just carbon being pulled out of molecules that you're burning. And the chemical reactions in the body, when you make energy, you're actually pulling apart molecules. So it's a similar reaction. It's not the same. But they essentially thought, oh, you know, how much energy is stored in a chemical bond? And we'll remove all the chemical bonds by igniting something and see how much chemical energy is stored. Whereas in reality, humans might be breaking down a couple of bonds in a molecule, not all the bonds in a molecule.
Okay, so the way the human body is using what we put in is different to the way that we're assessing it. So yeah. Where's the gap? What's the difference? So obviously we break the molecules apart, we use them as energy. Why wouldn't then the energy out equal what we're looking for?
So there's a few parts to that puzzle. The first part is not everything is digestible. So we don't have a flame in our stomach combusting all the material we eat. Unless maybe you have heartburn and you feel like you do. So if you're eating a lot of fibrous material, that's essentially this really dense cellulose material in plants that creates this fiber. You can't really digest that. And the way animals digest it is they have multiple stomachs and they have bacteria that will actually eat away at it and then break that down into smaller byproducts that can be absorbed in the stomach. And we have a relatively small stomach for that procedure. And so a lot of that fiber material will go into our bowel and sit there until we need to make a bowel movement. So already, if you're eating a lot of fibrous plant material, that's going to be pushed straight out the other end. And I think another example, if you eat a lot of processed food, sometimes to add fiber, they actually add wood shavings. I don't know why, but that's not even going to be broken down by the bacteria in your gut. So that fiber is just going to clog up your system and you're not going to get any energy out of it. And so that's another thing where if you're reducing those calories, you were never having those calories to begin with.
Okay, so the first issue then is what we eat as fibers and stuff, it takes it away. So that doesn't count, even though it might combust in Atwater's furnace. It doesn't count in our gut and our energy. What are the other gaps in what we're outputting as far as energy goes?
So another big one is actually protein. So again, what they do is they combust proteins. And proteins have a lot of chemical elements in them, like sulfur, where your body likes them to be in an organic molecule that it can recycle to use in rebuilding tissue in your muscles and organs. So it's actually quite expensive for the body to rip that apart and then build a new molecule out of all of those elements. So you're not really using that energy. You bring in some protein, you're going to snip it up into a few useful parts and then reorient it and put it back together for what your body needs. You're not going to get a lot of energy out of protein. There is a pathway called gluconeogenesis where your body will produce sugar out of excess proteins, but it's actually quite energy intensive to start that process. Your body's not going to do it unless you're eating a lot of protein.
So eat more protein to burn more inside.
Yeah, you can do that.
Don't eat too much because otherwise it makes sugar. Okay, so if we're eating proteins, the way I'm hearing it is the energy used is a lot more inside to break that apart and to get what we need out of it. So now you've got this energy.
Well, your body's not going to use the protein as energy, right? It's going to use it as a building block for something else.
What does it use it for?
Well, if you're a bodybuilder, it's going to go straight into your muscle tissues. If you have inflammation, it's probably going to go to the places where you got inflammation to try and help repair that. I think there's a statistic that the average cell in the human body is replaced every 7 years. So you think you've got trillions of cells in your body. So millions of those are dying every day and need to be replaced. And your body's going to rebuild them. It's going to recycle the good parts of the cells it has. And then you need new proteins added to your body to sort of make up the gap to make healthy new cells for every part of your body, really.
It's crazy. The body knows what it's doing, and then we go and feed it these freaking wood shavings. It's ridiculous. Are there any other gaps in the energy? So we've got this energy going in. So now we're using protein differently to what they thought. Now we're using fiber differently and pulling bits of that out. What else? What are the other gaps?
So I think for macronutrients, those are the two big gaps. Largely, if you're absorbing fats or if you're absorbing sugars, your body can absorb those quite readily and use most of the energy that's stored chemically inside of them. Where the next big gap is how your overall metabolism responds to the diet you're eating. So for example, if you're on a ketogenic diet and you're having a high content of fat, your body is going to be producing a lot of bile, which is the chemical inside the body that breaks down fats and actually helps you absorb it so you can get the energy out of it. And if you're on a low-fat diet, which a lot of people are advised to do these days, your body's going to slow down producing bile and you're going to have very small amounts. And people actually get gallbladder stones because they stop producing bile altogether on extremely low-fat diets. And that's another issue people have to deal with. But if you then are ingesting some fat, your body isn't going to be able to absorb it if there's no bile in the gut ready to break the fats down.
Yeah, that is an issue. So what about people who have their gallbladder removed doing keto? Like, is that safe?
So I'm not a medical doctor. I don't know about giving advice on that. I know that there's plenty of people that seem to do it quite successfully. I think some people look into alternative things like ox bile to help supplement if they need to. But there's plenty, if you go on low carb down under, if you're in Australia and you look at they have a list of doctors, they should be able to help you through that. Yeah, but nice. it's definitely something people do.
Yeah, that's a great resource, isn't it? And it's getting bigger and bigger every day.
Yeah.
So what about when we eat fats? Like, can we store fat as fat?
Not easily. So what is the fat to fat mechanism? So generally, if you're eating a lot of fat, your cell membrane for your cells is actually made out of fat. And preferentially, it's the fat that you eat or ingest that's used to replace the linings of every single cell in your body. So I said just before that there's trillions of cells and every cell is replaced on average like every 7 years. So you're always using fat in your body to replace these cells. And so if you're eating a modest amount of fat or even a larger amount of fat, preferentially, all that fat's going to actually be used for replacing and regenerating the cells and the health of all the tissues in your body. The fat that's stored in your storage fat cells, that actually can't be used for replenishing or healing the cells in your body. I was having lunch with Stephen Finney at Low Carb Down Under when he was explaining that mechanism to me, which I found quite interesting.
Wow, that is cool. And it's so hard to wrap your head around because of, we're told that fat makes us fat.
Mm.
Then that's another layer, isn't it? It's like the fat that we've stored now needs to be used for something else.
And that has to be used as energy really to get rid of it.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you do that then?
So there's a couple steps to that problem. One of the steps is you actually need to sort of reduce the barrier to accessing that fat, right? So if you're having a lot of sugar, we've learned that sugar is inflammatory. And so the body wants to keep sugar levels in the blood down. And the way it does this is by secreting insulin to actually get the sugar out. And it stores the sugar as fat, actually. And an important thing I learned is the process of getting sugar and turning it into fat requires vitamin C. So when you see people talk about, you can't go keto or you can't go carnivore because you're not going to get enough vitamin C. If you're not eating sugar, you don't need the vitamin C to actually turn the sugar into fat.
Myth busted.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Was it you that was talking about scurvy?
I don't think I spoke about scurvy, but it's something, I've looked into a little bit.
What do you know about it?
It's actually a lot of meat packaging. They'll say that there's like zero vitamin C in the meat on the dietary label. And apparently if you look at the label, I've heard from a few other people, that it's like assumed zero, and they're using measurements from people like 50, 60 years ago who were trying to measure it, and they thought, vitamin C is too hard to measure in meat. We'll just give up and say that there's none in there. But if you go back like 150 years, the Napoleonic Wars in Europe, they were actually using the meat from horses that were killed in combat to cure scurvy. And so you got to think, you need vitamin C to cure scurvy, and you can cure it by feeding someone meat. There's got to be something going on there.
I still find that insane, the fact that, don't eat meat. What have we been surviving on? How did our brains get big, tens of thousands and thousands of years ago? Like, we were designed to eat those kinds of foods.
The thing that really clicked the whole keto puzzle together for me was actually the evolutionary biology argument. And so modern humans in one form or another have been around for about 4 million years. And we're not in an ice age at the moment, which is actually really weird. About 75% of the history of humans has been in ice ages. And more recently, the studies from archaeologists and anthropologists has shown that humans actually moved away from the equator and away from the tropics during the ice ages, probably because they're chasing those larger mammals like woolly mammoths for all the meat and all the fat. And so we've actually spent most of our time in nature as animals getting used to that diet. And then all of a sudden, 10,000 years ago, we're like, oh, let's chuck in some grains and let's grow veggie patches and let's move back to the equator and gorge ourselves on fruit. And we can adapt to it because we've got leftover adaptations from our previous ancestors back when we were, you know, monkeys living in trees. But since then, we've, you know, become much more efficient at other forms of food, such as the meats and the fatty animal hunting, essentially.
Yeah, that's just fascinating. I didn't know that about the Ice Ages. Oh, you're full of, well, we're going to have to do a sequel to this. Because that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we can dive into, yeah.
So you mentioned your parents at the start of this. So they're kind of keto, low carb now. What have you seen with them?
Yeah, so they've been keto, I think, for about 2 years. They had an intermission period during COVID when they were locked down in Melbourne for a while. It was really, I don't know, it was like annoying for me because before I moved out of home with them, I wanted to go keto and I knew it would help them and I would tell them to do it. And they're like, oh, yeah, the science is all good, but how do you actually do it? And I was kind of like, yeah, that's a good point. And it's easy for me understanding it to say, oh, this thing has sugar in it and this thing doesn't. But after I moved away, I found a doctor not far away from my parents that was practicing low carb, actually on the Low Carb Down Under website. And it was really the guidance from the doctor and the team with the dietitians there that was able to give them the counseling and the support and the advice and give them like little pamphlets with, you know, pictures of like, eat these things in the green zone and these things are red, like stay away from those foods. And that was really what helped them get into it.
You're right. It's a simplification of, because most people are like, well, okay, that, how do I get off sugar? How do I get off carbs? So when you make it simple for people, they're like, okay, great. Just like the food pyramid was simple. And I think that's maybe why it was so successful, because it was like, do this, do this, do this, minimize that. So what have they seen like 2 years down the track? What have you seen improve on with them?
So my dad, I'll start off with him a little bit. He's definitely lost some weight and he's got a bit more energy and is able to move around a bit more. And I recently got him to start doing some resistance training, so I'm quite excited for that. My mum's transformation was a bit more extreme. So I remember she had really bad fibromyalgia and her diabetes was going a bit out of control. And she saw what happened to her dad, who died pretty young with a lot of complications to diabetes. And she was reaching this point where she wanted to give up. And my dad and I were very worried because she couldn't focus on anything and she was really struggling to pay attention and remember things. And she was in so much pain. She was essentially bedridden when she wasn't at work. And we could tell that the end was coming pretty close. We didn't know what to do. And my mom was sort of at this point where she's like, you know, screw it. I'm going to just eat that tub of ice cream because it's going to make me feel good now and I may not be here tomorrow. And I'd sort of told her she should try it for a while. And I think she was so desperate at that point. She's like, I'll try anything and I'll just give it 100%. And so when I got her to go to that low carb doctor, within a few weeks, you know, she got off statins and she was having a lot of side effects from the statins. She already had low cholesterol. She was only taking them because she was diabetic and you actually need cholesterol for mental health. And it's been shown that whilst lowering cholesterol might be a marker for heart disease in men, the lower your cholesterol, you increase your risk of heart disease for women. And that's a study that's not very well known.
Right.
And then her fibromyalgia definitely increased a lot. She still has some issues. But, you know, like after a few months of being on this diet, they decided to sell their home and retire in a smaller home. And my mom went from being, you know, bedridden and barely able to get to work to spending 12 hours a day, like doing gardening and painting the house and renovating rooms. And I just couldn't believe it.
Wow. So your dad got his wife back.
Yeah.
You got your mom back and she got her life back.
Yeah.
Far out. And what about her cholesterol? Like,
I don't think she even looks at it anymore.
Nice. Good stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, you and I both know that the cholesterol thing is flawed. And actually, you touched on that for mental health. Do you know much about that?
My basic level of understanding is about 2/3 of the brain is actually made out of fatty material. And cholesterol is a way of moving fats and lipids around the body. And I said earlier, like all the cells in your body, the membranes, the lining of each cell is actually made out of fats. So you really need the fats and the cholesterol moving around to keep everything healthy. And there's a lot of studies now showing, you know, low cholesterol has issues with cognitive decline. It's been linked to Alzheimer's and dementia. And yeah, it's got high cholesterol has a lot of protective effects there. There's even studies that show you can relatively accurately predict when someone's going to die within 3 or 4 years, because you see this all of a sudden their cholesterol is stable, and then it starts to drop. And as soon as it starts to drop, it's like, okay, you're getting close to the end now. The body's stopping repairing itself.
It really is frightening the way our human health or sickness has decreased with the introduction of the food pyramid. And until you're forced to look at it and look at the actual science and go, hang on a minute, like where the heck did we go wrong? And then you start pulling it all apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a layman like me who doesn't understand biology or didn't, you know, to listen to that coming from someone like you who is obviously very capable at, you know, pulling that science out and going, wait a minute, there's the study. Like to hear all those pieces come together with what you're talking about is fascinating. So if somebody, obviously you're not a medical practitioner, but you've been down this road yourself, if somebody was listening to this and they've been thinking about this, what advice would you give them to go down this path of a ketogenic or a low carb diet?
I think I would start off by saying a lot of medical research is really, really good at acute problems, not long-term chronic problems. And all these diets and studies around diet, nutrition, and longevity, they're very deeply flawed. Going back to the cholesterol example, for a second, there's a genetic mutation that a certain amount of people in the population have. That means you're going to have a much higher rate of high cholesterol just due to this genetic mutation. And if you have high cholesterol and you're on a high sugar diet where you're oxidizing that cholesterol and creating problems for yourself, then the issue with this is back in the 60s, that wasn't really well understood. And so they wanted to understand, like, what's the link between cholesterol and heart disease? So they would find people that were close to having a heart attack that had high cholesterol, because they wanted people to have heart attacks to study the intervention of low cholesterol. And so they ended up selecting at like 1% of the population that have this genetic condition, which gives them an artificially high cholesterol level. And then because they didn't realize it was a genetic condition at the time back in the 60s and 70s, they've applied the findings to the rest of the general population. And it's, at best, it's had a negligible or slightly bad impact on men, which is what most of the studies were done on. At worst, it's been shown that the opposite effects happen in women. It's probably been very detrimental to women's health because they respond very differently to cholesterol.
Oh, it's such a tangled web. And yeah. I think, you know, when I'm doing my teaching and my training, I'm always running into women going, what about my cholesterol? Because I guess the doctors don't know either. They're just going by what they were taught either back at medical school or so. I think, you know, when you explain it like that, we just need to go and deliver papers to all the doctors and practitioners to go, here, read this. You know, they were the cherry picking again, like the food pyramid, I suppose.
It can be really hard to get doctors to listen to it as well. And I think the best way to make change is actually from the bottom up with the grassroots movement. If people start adopting keto and if people have higher cholesterols, but they've improved their overall health and all their risk markers for, you know, stroke and heart attack and cancer have gone down, and doctors are seeing this, and it's not just one patient, it's all, you know, a couple of years later, I've now got 10 patients that have done this. They're going to have to start questioning what they've been taught. And we're slowly seeing more doctors come around that way. And I think that's how it's going to happen.
Yeah, you're right. I'm seeing that list grow and grow. Like when I first started 4 years ago, that list was kind of like this. And now it's, you know, you need more pages, which is great. So when let me just go back. When you started keto, what were the three things you did? So you upped your meats, you lowered your sugar. Like what was your process there?
So there were sort of two main things. I always ate a lot of meat. I think I swapped over to fattier meat, or if I was eating something like chicken, I would get several avocados and mash it up and mix it in with the chicken to make sure there's enough fat there. Another thing I would do is just avoid processed foods, because that's where a lot of the carbs sneak in. And then there's this understanding, like I learned this in high school chemistry, it's not really advanced science, but a carbohydrate is just several sugar molecules linked together. And so if you're eating bread, it's got no sugar, but it's going to dissolve in your stomach acid into sugar molecules. And so it was just avoiding anything with carbs, not just getting low on sugar.
Great advice. And I just don't, we go, oh, you know, are you off sugar, you know, for people who've got cancer, because we know that sugar's feeding cancer. And I just don't think people understand, you know, even at, I might have learned that in science, but it doesn't compute in
my. You've got to link the dots, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So being that grains turn into sugar, like they're literally what, one division away from sugar?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you've got any kind of advice to somebody who maybe has done keto and they've lost a bit of weight, but maybe they've sort of plateaued, like I'm sure you went through that. What did you do to kind of amp up the result?
Oh, I think sometimes you just have to stick with it. And over time, you might get slower and slower progress, but you'll still see progress. I think you're not going to really lose weight necessarily by exercising, but it will improve your overall metabolism. And by having a healthier metabolism, it'll increase the health benefits you're getting from keto, and that might show up in more weight loss.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I'm pulling that bit out. and we might make that the title. That's awesome, because, you know, we still think eat less, move more is the thing. So your speech or your presentation was titled You Can't Eat a Calorie. So as we wrap up, just explain that in really simple terms to anyone who might be listening.
I'll give it my best attempt. So really, you can think of a calorie as measuring energy. And if you have two molecules, they sort of want to push each other apart. So it takes energy to stick them together. And that's how we build molecules. And so your body, when it digests food, is trying to rip those two atoms apart and release the energy used to hold them together. Now, your body's going to do that with certain chemical bonds, not all chemical bonds. And if you put something in a flame that's, you know, a couple hundred degrees, you're going to release all that energy. And all that energy then in a lab, what we do is we put that next to basically a container of water, and we measure how much the water heats up. And our body is not a calorimeter. It doesn't measure the heat from exploding a material. So you can't, when we talk about the calories in a food product, you're not actually eating the energy. You're eating the mass, the molecules, the weight of the food, the kilograms of food. And then your body has to figure out, do I want to break that down for energy? Is that going to pass through the bowel because I don't know what to do with it? Can I recycle that into muscle tissue, not use it for energy, but use it as a building block for something else? And so that's why I said you can't really eat a calorie. You're eating the mass of the food. And it's that, how much are you eating in and how much is going out is the real question.
I love that. Oh, wow. Thank you so very much for your time. All that information is so useful, and I just love the way you explain everything. I'm so grateful that you said yes to this. Of all of the people I listened to, I was like, I need to talk to you. So thank you so very much. Was there anything you wanted to add that we didn't cover?
If you want to have a part two and dive into some of the other things we highlighted on, I'm happy to do that.
Oh, yes. I'm really interested in cholesterol and what you're saying about female, the way we process and the way we need a bit more cholesterol. I'm super interested in that. So, yes, please. Ray, thank you so much for your time. You are an absolute wealth of knowledge. I so appreciate you, and I look forward to part two.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Amazing. Thank you.